Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim brings us right back to the wedding of Rebbe's son and Bar Kappara's dangerous presence. Not a man you'd want to invite to your wedding. So Rebbe made the mistake of inviting him in the end to the wedding. In the other versions, it says that they had to redo the whole hall and had to repaint the walls, and they made a new wedding because the graffiti that he put up on the walls wrecked the previous wedding. Others learned that this was a Shema Bracha, so whatever, and different approaches. Then the Pashtus is that they redid the wedding. That's what the Midrashim are Mashma. And so the night before, everybody's saying, you know, Bar Kappara, nobody's going to pay any attention to you at this wedding. Believe me, nobody wants you at the wedding. So Bar Kappara says, we're up to here on Daf Nun Aleph, Second Nedarim, Daf Nun Aleph, and we're up to Omerle Bar Kappara Levarte the Rebbe. So here, after everybody is saying, you ain't going to be at that wedding, Bar Kappara says, okay, he says, Rebbe's daughter, he says, I guarantee you, Lemocha Shatina Chamra Brikuda Davuch Ubekirkani de Imech. I am going to not only be at that wedding, okay? I'm going to be drinking at that wedding, and your father is going to be dancing in front of me while I drink. Okay? You say he doesn't want me there. He's going to be dancing in front of me, and your mother is going to be karkune, you know, those sounds that they make. She's going to be doing that for me while I drink with your father dancing. Okay? You watch, I guarantee you. Watch this. Fine. So what happens? Now, before we start this, you have to know about the son-in-law of Rebbe, who was called Ben Elasa. So Ben Elasa was a very chashuv guy, and he was extremely rich, and he dedicated his money to reconstructing the haircut of the Kohen Gadol. Now, he did this because for some reason Barnea wasn't able to get that kind of haircut, and we don't know why, but there was some kind of problem. And because of that, Ben Elasa decided that he was going to do this. So he took the best barbers and spent millions just to finally get that haircut right. Fine. Now, you have to know, this is just an advance to understand the impact that Bar Kappara's presence made. So we need to tell you who Bar Elasa was so that you can understand what happened at the end. Okay, so just as an aside, you should know that Ben Elasa was Rebbe's son-in-law, and he was an Oshir Godol Havet. Okay, so next. Back to the wedding. So Azmei Elavei Lula de Rebbe Shimon Bar Rebbe, and they invited Bar Kappara in the end to the chasen of Rebbe Shimon Bar Rebbe. So there they are, all at the head table over there. Everybody's listening in. They want to hear the godless of the Talmid Chachomim. So Bar Kappara walks over to Rebbe and the chosen, and he's there at the head table. And he asks them the craziest thing, what exactly are your feelings about homosexuality? It's not exactly what to ask at a wedding, right? So he says, can you explain to me what the pasuk means when it says, Zachar lo tishkaf to'evahi? What does a to'eva mean? So, of course, everybody knows what to'eva means, right? Like poor Dr. Sachs, his mother told him, you're an abomination. So, okay, what is an abomination exactly? So everybody starts saying, listen, it must mean this, it must mean this. Kol d'amar le'Rebbe, every pshat that Rebbe told him about to'eva, he showed him that that's not true from other examples. So obviously, says Bar Kappara, you guys have personal hangups. Weddings are not about personal hangups. If you're trying to make a kiddushin, do you think that kiddushin really has to do about God's feelings about gay rights? Is that what you think? So Rebbe says, all right. Okay, so you tell me. Well, says Bar Kappara, I will tell you, but, you know, I mean, I need a little bit of service first before I tell you. This is the Derech LeTalmid HaChachamim, you know, the Kayale Milcha and so on. So I'll tell you what I want. I'm willing to tell you on one condition. Teisei Devitchei and Tirmili Natla Achas. I want your wife to come and pour me a nice cup of, must have been, Richie. We know what it must have been, Richie. Forget it. Maybe it was just wine. It wasn't Jack Daniels, I can tell you that. Anyway, so she should pour me the drink. Okay, so she comes over, she pours him the drink. She says, okay, so now you're ready to tell me? Romulate. So he says to Rebbe, that's not quite enough. I mean, that's just your wife. Now I need you to be dancing while I drink. I mean, this is a wedding. We got to really give it our best, right? Okay, fine. So Rebbe's ready to dance. And remember, Rebbe was ready to do anything, including, as he says in other places, you know, I'll carry your clothes into the mikveh for you if you just tell me the pshat. It was like, fine. He was willing to be mezalzel, anything for Divrei Torah. I won't understand. Okay, so tell me. So after he drinks, so I'll tell you. The meaning of to'eva is to'eataba. You're making a mistake. Women are more fun. Absolutely incredible pshat. To'eva, fine. So then, okay, the wedding goes on a little bit. And l'kasach, Rina, it's time for making another l'chaim. So he goes over again. He says, now, got another question for you. How about sex with animals? Are you in favor? You're not in favor? Or how do you understand the Torah says, tevelhu? Okay, you got a pshat in tevelhu. Let's hear your gut reactions again. Okay, here we have all our anti-zoophiles. Tell me what you think, Tevel. Again, the same thing happens. Rebbe tells him, this is the pshat. Shows them, everyone, nope, that's not the pshat. Okay, so you tell me. So what's the pshat? So then, he only agrees, kinyana kadma, amale avidli. He says, doma lach avidli, do me the same thing you did before. I need your wife to come and to make all the noise and to pour me the drink. And then you have to dance. We'll dance. We'll have a good time. And then I'll tell you. Okay, so fine. They make a lachaim. And he says, I'll tell you what tevel means. Tevel means delicious. But you're supposed to read it. It's tavlin. It's spicy. That's what we talk in English. We use the word spicy for this kinky sex. It's spicy. But I say the Torah is asking you, is this particularly spicy? Like you like this better than anything else? So tavlin yeshba. Mishanya hada bia minkulon bias. I mean, the bottom line is sex, right? I mean, don't you think you could worry about your own species just as much fun? So, same idea. This is driving them nuts. And you can imagine at a wedding to be raising all of these issues, right? Okay. Comes time for the next course. Time for l'chaim. Amale. Okay. It says not to rent your daughter out as a whore. You know, zimahi. Okay, what's your feelings about Zimahi? What do you mean about Zimahi? Oh my God, it's filling the world with promiscuity. It's this, it's that. No, prove to you it's not that. Zima, Atzas Chatoyim, the Targum. Every pshat, not good enough for Bar Kapur. So he finally says, okay, just tell us, will you please? Maybe this is the last one. So he says, I'll tell you what Zimahi. It's also a question. Zo ma he. Basically, if she gets pregnant, you're going to have to say, so who's daddy? I don't know. If you're renting around, daddy could be anybody. You don't want to know who your grandchild is. That's what it means. Unbelievable. Okay. At this point, Ben Elasa was so disgusted by this wedding that he simply got up and walked out. So Ben Elasa could not stand another minute of this. And come, Vinofak, he took himself and his wife and walked out of the wedding, which was like a terrible thing. I mean, this Rebbe's wedding, it's his father-in-law. And he's walking out of the wedding. Walks out of the wedding. So Bar Kapara did a good job. There's a beautiful medrash, right, that we have elsewhere that says that then Rebbe's sitting at the wedding. So now it comes time for the meal. Rebbe's sitting at the wedding. All the food is cold. So Rebbe is furious. So he calls out the maitre d' from the kitchen. So the maitre d' says, Rebbe, there's nothing I can do. This crazy guy came into the kitchen, and every time the waiters are about to take out the food, He sits down, he puts on a whole comedy routine. Nobody can move. They're laughing their heads off. But by the time he lets them out, the food is cold. Oi, bar kapuras in there, says Rebbe. Anyway, so he managed to make a lot of difficulties in this wedding. Amazing, though. The daf could use a wedding to try to penetrate to the nature of Kedusha, as opposed to feelings that people have. This is not a Christian wedding, Rebbe. This is a wedding where you are the leader of Klal Yisrael. Tell us what a wedding means. Amazing. Anyway, this business about bar what exactly was Ben Alassal all about that you're making such a fuss about Ben? I'd say he was rich, but my Ben Alassal, like, what made him famous? The Tanya. Others learn my Ben Alassal means, why did they call him Al Shem his father? Why didn't they use his name? So that's supposed to mean that Ben Alassal, he was a inherited millions of dollars that he didn't work for, right? So most people that don't have to work for their money, they end up blowing their money. So therefore, you would think Alassal, he ended up actually blowing all his money. But the Gemara wants to tell you, he didn't blow his money on nothing. It's not the pshat that he liked special haircuts. Lo lechinam, it wasn't for no purpose that Ben Alassal blew all of his money. Pizer Ben Alassal motav. Yalla laharot bam tisporet shekohen gadol. The whole point was that he wanted to show what the beauty was of the tisporet of a kohen gadol, because it says in the pasuk asom yichsimu et roshehem. And what exactly does that mean? I mean, it's like some type of special darga of the kohanim. And the Braita explains what that means, that it's ke'en lulinit. It's like the famous Roman lulinit haircut, which was what? My lulinit. Omri Yehuda tisparta yichidata. It's like the most incredible haircut. Hechidami. Omar Rava, it means that every single hair is uniquely placed so that it touches the root of the hair adjacent to it. So, Rosh Hashanah, Betzad, Ikro Hashanah. That was the tisporet of the Kohen Gadol, and it took him his father's life savings to be able to prove it. Okay, then the Mishnah says, so you.
Dr. Berry has made a very telling comment. What should a person blow his money on?
Yeah, I didn't see the comment.
I thought it would be reasonable to mention Rav Kaplan's thought. There was a mention.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Yes. Yes. Rav Kaplan's Tzedakah Fund for Hanukkah. So, as you know, every year, Rav Kaplan used to make a magbit for Hanukkah. And as he explained to me a number of times, it's not that there are particular expenses of Hanukkah that he needs to do a magbit. But the problem is that there's so much time between Sukkot and Pesach, when he would be doing the Magbiot, that people would just get depressed that nobody cared about them, that there was no help that was coming in, and so on. So he basically used Hanukkah as an excuse. And he made it like a Hanukkah kind of thing, even though it really had nothing to do specifically with Hanukkah expenses. And that he used to do every year. So I spoke to his son a few weeks ago. I can't believe I forgot. I put it down to remind myself. I keep looking at him. Anyway, so his son told me that because that's what their father used to do, that's what they want to do, and they're doing it this year. And he didn't even ask me. I told him so. I mean, we used to participate every year. So if you're doing it, I want to participate. So here I am asking anybody who wants to, please let me know if you made a donation in the U.S. Also, let me know about it so I can make sure that he understands, because there's other money coming into that fund. So let me know that it's for the Hanukkah Magbit. And if you want to, you want the Israeli tax receipt, I think we had that worked out. Richie sent it out to whoever needed it. And then anybody who doesn't know how to get the money there, I'm happy to forward it to them, or they could just tell me and then pay me at some future date. Okay, continues the Gemara. So, bedalat harmutza. So, what exactly is a dalat harmutza is different? In what way is a dalat harmutza? My dalat harmutza, what is it exactly? Omar Shmuel, it is a type, we're on the pumpkin now, and it's pumpkin time of the year, so it's a pumpkin that comes from harmutza. It's the name of a place, it's a type of species. Kara karkuzoi. which undoubtedly is somewhere that Reb Arnea can identify as an out-of-way place in his neighborhood. Where is the Karkuzoi, Reb Arnea? Oy, 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 we called Reb Arnea out today twice. This is terrible. All right, so make it all up at the third time. So Reb Ashi says, no, it's a regular pumpkin, but it's a pumpkin that has been cooked by putting it into hot ash and leaving it there until it softens. And that is the same as the Dalat HaMitzrit, is Kilayim. If you plant them together with Dalat HaYevanit, those are different species, and is Kilayim with the Dalat HaRmutza. Now, obviously, HaRmutza has to be the name of a species. It can't be the way that you prepare it. Otherwise, how did it get into Kilayim, for heaven's sakes? Ay, ay, ay. Tiyufta. Absolutely no way to support Reb Ashi in this. However, there is a way to support Sir Richard, and that would be if he appears... If he appears, you're going to get called to the principal's office soon, Richie.
I'm here.
Go.
Are we ready?
I think we're ready. Akiva seems to be a bit late on the draw here this morning, but I think we're ready. And he looks like he's back in Cape Town. And Reb Danny is getting close, I see. Okay. Got a picture of Jeffrey's Bay this morning. Already. Beautiful. Hanoder mima'asei kideira. So somebody makes a neder and he uses the word ma'asei kideira. Oops, lost my screen here. I don't know what this is. Ay, ay, ay. Eino asur ela mima'ase ratakta. So now again, we have to remember that these are words that we really don't have equivalents for in English. I mean, this was a way in which they used these terminologies, and we're not used to them. But the idea is, of course, that everything is local, as the Rambam says, and the Mishnah is giving us examples of the diuk that one can have in local usages. So, what we said is, the literal translation of ma'aseh kideira means things prepared in a pot. But that would mean, eino aser, ela mima'aseh retachta. Those are things that are prepared through a lot of boiling, not something that you just dip in. But how about if he says, konam hayored lekideira, anything that goes into a pot is asur ani shani toin, then he is asur b'chol anaseh b'kideira, anything, even if it's just put in for a moment as part of, let's say you're going to be making bagels, right? So first you're going to put the bagels into boiling water before you bake them. So that's also called, it's a yored l'kideira, even though it's not completed in the kideira. So then he would be asur on anything that is actually completed in the kedera. So then the question is, these kinds of meisim would apply also to the normal way. What they used to do is that they would first put a lot of food, soften it up before they would put it into a stir fry or into bichlal, making it a fried dish. They didn't like to have deep fried things. Instead, they had things that were cooked initially in boiling, and then it was put for finishing, for the taste, it was put into the frying pan, which is called the ilfis. So therefore, somebody is noder min hayored lekidera, asur biyored leilfis. So if he said things that go into the kidera, which the Mishnah said is even if it's just put there for a short time, so then even though it is, in the end, it's completed in the ilfis, so it's fried, that is still called yored l'kedera. Shekvar yored l'kedera kodem sheyored l'ilfis, because the way of cooking was to first soften in the boiling. If he says, min hayored l'ilfis, so then he would be mutter biyored l'kedera. So if he says, the idea over here is that when he says min ha-yored be'ilfus, if it hasn't yet been yored le'ilfus, now think about what the words would mean to you, because it could easily be understood as things that are going to be cooked in an ilfus, things yored on their way down into the frying pan. So you might think that when you started preparing this, you already got to the stage in which it's been put into the boiling, it's now sitting on your counter next to the frying pan, you're about to throw it into the frying pan. Is that considered to be yored le'ilfus? So the Bryce is coming to tell you, no, it is not. And even though it was basically ready, that's not what yored le'ilfus means. So if he's gnoder from yored le'ilfus, he's mutter if it's only been yored likidera, and it hasn't as yet been completed to actually been put into the ilfus. Min ha-nase be'kidera. So then mutter be'nase be'ilfus. The lashon of nase be'kidera means that it is completed, its cooking is completed in the kidera, so then it would be mutter b'nase be'ilfus. If he says, min ha-nase be'ilfus, is mutter b'nase be'kidera, even though it may be put afterwards into the ilfus. But if it was completed, if the cooking was completed before, so even if afterwards you put it into the frying pan, it doesn't make any difference, because that's not what nase b'kidera. Yored is a whole different thing. Yored means you put it first in, and then you complete it in the ilfus. But when you use the word nase, you mean it shall be finished. That's not the same thing as yored l'kidera, and it's not the same thing as maase k'dera. So nase b'kidera means, you see the diukim in the lashon, and this is what we're meant to understand, that the same word with a slightly different grammatical construct can mean completely different things. And therefore, when you say nas as opposed to maase, you think, I mean, that's basically the same thing. It's not basically the same thing, because naase means has already been made, which implies that it's completed. That's the pshat. And therefore, even if afterwards the guy realizes, oh, heck, I let this overcook in the pot and it's been boiled, so now I'm going to put it into the frying pan to try to get at least a finish on it, that's not called the normal Maisi Kedera and so on. So if it was finished in the Kedera and then you put it into the office, that's not called an Asabi office. And if you say Nasabi office, it means it was completed in the office. And that is going to be mutter if it was Nasabi Kedera, of course. Now, how about when it comes to an oven? So surprisingly over there, if somebody says min hayored litanur, now, we understood min hayored in the Mishnah, min hayored l'kidera, would mean anything at all, kol hanase b'kidera. And you would have thought that the same thing is true about the oven. As a matter of fact, there are those who change the gears of the Gemara because it seems so crazy that before we use the word yored to mean an extended envelope of what I'm talking about, and now we're using yored in the opposite sense, that the things that are yored to the tanur is the specific thing that's yored min ha-tanur. So then he's only usher bepat. And the way Ron understands this is that the idea over there is the hey ha-yidiyah. If you're talking about the thing, I mean, the thing is baked things, right? You can also use your oven for kugel. But I mean, come on, ovens, remember, especially then, the oven was essentially a pizza oven, right? And it really worked by sticking the things around the edges. I mean, so you could put things in it to also bake what we call baking, but that would not be hayored l'tanur. That is the special thing that the tanur is miyuchet for. We don't have the same concept when it comes necessarily to other types of things like pots. And if he says, koma se tanur alai, then he would be usher on potato kugel that was baked. Oh my gosh, a disaster. Richie, what are we going to do? Now, the same thing is true.
I mean, this was normal, right? Shari Chesed, as Kishla Sirla Shama always talked about, everybody brought their children to the bakery. But that was the oven.
Yeah, but it wasn't cooked. It was kept warm. The bakeries were all the bakeries were used. They didn't have ways to keep things warm. They didn't have ovens like we have today. So my uncle used to do this when I was living in that area. So Meir Shalom was the same thing. Everybody would go into the baker, and they would use the oven, would stay warm over Shabbos. They would put it into the oven. That way they would come in the morning and they had warm challah.
On the banks of the Tigris River, we found a raw fish that looked kosher. We called the rabbi, the local rabbi, said, yeah, that would be kosher. And we took it with aluminum foil, and we cut onions, lemons with plastic, and we brought it to local bakery, and we baked it with Seth Kaplan. So I again, a raw fish with chachila to the bakery, because that's
wow. What we cooked.
So,
wow.
Nice.
Barnea's neighborhood is an amazing place. It's a travel through time. All right, Sir Richard, we are ready. Hail a Talisker. So, continuing on, again, this is the way the Ron understands it, and that it's all a function of the. So the difference between the Hey HaYidiyah, is, according to him, is the whole point in all of these Mishnayas. So, min ha-kavush. Okay, if I say to you, pickles, what comes to mind? Pickled cucumber. Now, it may be true that, you know, pickled meat is also pickled, but you don't call it pickles. Exactly. So, when you want to talk about pickles, we're talking about pickled cucumbers, not meat, not vorscht. Pickled vorscht. So min hakavush, eino aser ela min hakavush. So you're, but if you just say kavush, anything pickled. I am not drinking that, Barnea. I'm sorry. So if you just say kavush ani toim, then you'd be aser in anything that was kavush. So now if you say min hashaluk is stews. What is stews? Don't give me this real men don't eat vegetable stews. We're talking about a nice, good stew of beef, right? So, ain't no other element of shaluk shalbasar. Ha shaluk. But if you say shaluk, that even includes someone who would be making a shaluk from stewed green peppers. Ay-yi-yi. So, shaluk shani toim is anything that was shaluk. How about if you said dikovish? So now in the Aramaic, is the Dalid, this is again the way the Ram learns this, there's many different ways of learning it, and he even brings an alternative of the placement of it, shanito aim, or that the shanito aim is the ikonakuda, that he expands the meaning with the shanito aim. He himself prefers this approach, that the main point over here is identifying the norm of the use of the word for such a thing, which we really do have. When it comes to pickles, it's very, very much similar to the way we would say in English. If you say anything pickled, so then obviously you would include anything pickled. But if you just use the word pickles, then it would be the equivalent of hakavush, the thing which is pickled, right? So the same thing is true over here. Would the dalit serve as the equivalent of the hey hayidia? Dikavish. Or is it just the same thing as kolakavush? So what would be dishalik, ditzali, dimaliach, hechan mashma? So which direction does that take? Because this, again, is very easy to understand according to the Ran. According to the other pshatim, it's very strange. You have to really do some contortions. So what does it mean? Tiboy. Tiboy remembers the Lashon of the Yerushalmi, which is take and... We already heard about the weird Lashonas of Nidorim, which brings us to the question of overtime. So now the issue is that Richie has been making a real fuss, and I feel that he's got to know that there's people who are ready to take his place at any time, and they're not asking for overtime, and they're nipping at his heels. I would say, Hashtika Yofelecha. Okay.
Is what's
that?
Is an acronym. It's taboo. It was an acronym. So
are you speaking English?
What is it? Is it a short acronym? Acronym.
Thank you.
What? Oh, no, it doesn't really mean. It's not an acronym. Teiku itself is not an acronym. Teiku means let it stand. Teikum, let it stand the way it is. Let the question stand, which is the same thing as T-boy. Okay, ask. Keep asking. I don't know. Keep asking. Yeah. How about if you talk about a roast? You say hot sli. Well, again, real men eat steak, lamb chops, braai. That's a tzli. And what do you think you put in a braai, for heaven's sakes? You're going to call shish kebab a bunch of potatoes on a stick? No, siree. Enu oser elemen atzli shel basar. Divi Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the chutzpah of calling kebab roasted green peppers, where the whole meaning of the word kebab is meat, for heaven's sakes. But that's what they do. Yes, indeed. These vegetarians, Baruch Avram will tell you all about it. He makes supposed shish kebab. I won't even tell you what he puts into it. So that
it's combobulated, but Rebbe's not drinking enough.
Dear Rebbe Yehuda, tzli shani toim, that's osir b'cholat tzliim. Now how about hamaliach? Hamaliach in those days referred to salted. The main thing that you ate that was salted was fish. Remember the need to preserve fish. There was no way to really get fish very far away from the yam at all because there was no refrigeration. So how the heck could anybody eat fish? You could only eat herring or some type of preserved fish, right? So suppose you would say v'maliach, that would mean salted fish. If you say maliach shani toim, then whatever was salted would be included. Suppose a person uses a double word for fish, dag dagim, meaning either dag or dagim, shani to'im. So then he would be osir on any kind of fish, bein dolim, bein ktanim, bein meluchim, bein tfeilim, bein chayim, bein muvushalim. So remember that a single fish, a large fish, is sold as a unit, but small fish is sold by weight. So therefore, you would call them dagim. If you were referring to a dog, and this would be the way, you would tell the fishmonger, I want a dog. If you're talking about a bunch of sardines, you would talk about dagim. I want, a pound of sardines. And therefore, if the guy says both, dag, dagim, then what he's talking about is the organism either as yechidim, large or small. Now, there's a whole discussion in Yerushalmi. So what's large? So again, this would mean something that would be sold as a unit on its own and not just weighed up as a bunch of them. And that would depend on the place. I mean, the Yerushalmi talks about if it's weighing one litra. Okay, so whatever. And it wouldn't matter then how it would be prepared. But he would be mutar b'tiri trufa, uvetzir, and b'murias. The difference between these is like this. A tiris trufa is a large fish that was never sold as the whole fish, possibly because it wasn't that tasty to eat it as like a tuna steak kind of thing. So what they would do is they would chop it up, and it was always sold as chopped tiris, tiris trufa, chopped tiris kind of fish. And it was sold as that. And the question is that similar to the idea of tzir and murias? Now, the tzir and the murias was very, very, in those days, was extremely popular. Murias simply means the squeezed out watery oil of fish. It was fish oil, which, by the way, they sell nowadays in pill form, as you know. This is Barnea's favorite topic when he's not in his neighborhood, is the question of which omega fats. So we talk about omega-3s, 4s, 5s. Barnea is no longer selling you fish oil. He's now selling He's no longer selling fish oil. He's selling you his new milk. right? Was it a milk that was omega 5? Okay, fine. I think he's also marketing the Grema thing, which is made out of Rimonim, which is already omega 6. I mean, he's like way ahead of anybody else. So the fish oil was called Murias. They also would market seer. And seer was not only the oil, but seer included tiny pieces of the innards of the fish that would be squeezed out. It wasn't the actual flesh of the fish. And that was seer. So Tiris is actual chopped fish. And the lesser ones, seer, Murias, is even less than that. So if somebody says dag or dagim, he's talking about real fish, not pieces of fish and not chopped up fish. But suppose he makes it neder minat sachana. Now, in those days, it's not such a nice word, because sachana means what a stink, right? Alat sachanato of the Yetzer Hara talks about that. Boy, does he stink. Okay. So, I mean, it does smell pretty bad. Stench. Yeah. Yes, thank you, Barnea. Stench. In Barnea's neighborhood, it's called stench. So anyway, somebody who's neder from the tzachana, so tzachana would include all of these kinds of chopped up things, would include tiris, and would mean, you know, the little herrings that they chop up and so on. That's all, to people who don't like it, is tzachana. Wah, get that out of here. But it would still refer to actual pieces of fish, and therefore he would be mutter, betzir, or bemurias, which don't contain actual pieces of fish. If he's noder mitirit trufa itself, so then that would include also osir, betzir, or bemurias, because those things would include even the kind of things that are marketed together with the tiris and trufa. It's a question over in the Girsa, because you must admit it's a little bit strange. Why would you, isn't even in those days, tiris trufa means tiris trufa. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, if a person says dag shanitoim, he's only osur on large fish. He's mutter in herring, sardines, and stuff like that. If he says dagim, dagashanitoim, then it's the opposite. He's only usher and eating sardines, herring, stuff like that, smaller fish, but he's allowed to eat gdolim. But the Mishnah is stressing that you said both. Dag daga, if you say dag dagashanitoim, then you're ushering ben gdolim ben katani. So Rav Papa asked Abaye, what makes you say that dag is a reference to gadol? And daga is a reference to katan. I mean, I'm assuming that what we're talking about is the story of Yonah. So it says over there, you're assuming that a dog is gadol. Dichti vayiman Hashem dag gadol livloa et Yonah. So, I mean, we're talking about a dog. That's something that is big enough for swallowing up a person. Pinocchio lives right in there very happily. And if that's the case, then I have a problem, because the pasuk doesn't continue with making a difference between a daga and a dog, because then it says, "Vayitpalel Yonah el Hashem Elokav mimei hadaga." So obviously, a daga and a dog are interchangeable. No, why? That's not true. You know the medrash. The medrash is that Yonah was too comfy in the dog, and he wasn't davening. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the dog spit Yonah out, and therefore a little dog. Now, of course, it wasn't really a little dog, because Yonah wasn't that little, but in relative to the first dog, we call it a dagah, just to say, okay, you're way too comfy. How about if things get a little bit more constricted, Yonah? Now you're going to daven? Okay, so finally he davens mime eha dagah. So look, Asha, Dilma palte dagadol ubale dagatan. Which is what the Medrash says happened. Ela, so what are you going to say? That what? Hadaga asher bi'or meta. I mean, you got to be kidding. Hadaga asher bi'or meta with the maka of dam, you're trying to tell me that what? That only the little fish died? Of course not. I mean, if the water turned to dam, I would imagine that any fish would have a hard time getting oxygen out of the blood. I wonder why. I mean, is hemoglobin really more difficult in terms of blood getting oxygenated? Well, of course it is. It holds the oxygen as a actual part of the molecule that it can let go of. That's the whole point. Well, water just has the oxygen that's been, you know, still is pure oxygen, and it's just a little water. It was a nice experiment, but it appears that it killed every type of dog, right? So you're trying to tell me, Tani metu gedolim lo metu. Ela daga mashma gedolim umashma ketani. But what's the matter with you? Asking a raya from the pasuk. Of course in the Torah it doesn't make a difference. But in Nedorim, as we've already seen, Nedorim halech achar lashon b'nei Adam. And that's the whole point. Hanoder min hatzachana. Omer le'ravina le'ravashi. How about if you say, Hare alai tzichin? So is tzichin the equivalent of tzachana, or tzichin just means these sharp kind of things? It would be like saying, is sushi only fish, or could sushi even be some kind of vegetarian thing that you surround with the rice and you turn it into sushi? Like people who don't like fish, they still may like sushi. I don't know if the real sushi eaters would accept that, but that's the question. So what would you say about tzichin? So all of these things have applications, b'yamenu. And the answer is, try to figure it out yourself, t'boy. And as you can imagine, boy oh boy, if you did a seker today about what real sushi is, that would be almost as problematic as proving that real men eat quiche. I don't know. All right, everybody, so we've had some fun. It's always a joy being with Bar Kapora, let me tell you.